Hello, Taurus in Taurus Rising, and welcome to your 2020 into 2021 astrology studio called the Taurus Guide to Radical Transformation. And the reason I'm calling it that is because the keynote of your astrology is Uranus in your birth sign. It's taken a couple of years to work its way in from Aries and get warmed up, and we are here now. I am going to take it nice and slow in this reading. I have a bit of ground to cover, and I want to make sure that you don't at any point feel overwhelmed. If you feel like there's too much information, you know, I would encourage you to pause the reading and assimilate what you've heard. You know, and sometimes the substance can be in one sentence. I've noticed this with astrology in a few different forms. Listen for what you need. Where I want to begin is by saying that, of course, I recognize that we are in incredibly tumultuous times, that we are in economically very challenging times, that we are in historically meaningful times, if you value the relationship between humans and the Earth, because we have now finally addressed global warming all in one little month. That's it. At the moment, it ain't happening because there's so little carbon being injected into the precious atmosphere that oil has become worthless. As of today, I'm recording on 4/20, the day that that the sun usually enters Taurus, oil went into negative value. I don't really understand that. I've got some calls out. I know what time it happened, 2:08 p.m., I guess New York, because that's where the market exchange is. And notably, with a little wink from the universe, this occurred on the 10th anniversary of the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. And I can't think of one person I know who wasn't cringing and enraged by that video that lasted for 3 months of oil gushing into the Gulf of Mexico. And so now we have had some much more than poetic justice here. I recognize that there's going to be some economic pain. I recognize that Uranus and Taurus was going to roil the markets. I was not expecting this. But what I have to say to you is that despite all of this turmoil and roiling and negative value of the allegedly most precious commodity, the blood of civilization and all that, and despite the complete rearrangement of the economy, your astrology points to some truly new and unusual success. You have been entering for a while now, but it really kicked in early 2020, March 21st to be exact, when Saturn changed signs. Territory that I've been wondering for a long time how I was going to quite sum this up, so I hope I'm up to the task. But the thing to keep your eyes on and your mind on, and to ask yourself what this is a metaphor for, because as A Course in Miracles reminds us, symbols stand for something else. So it's always important to remember that when there's a symbol that presents itself in some form, whether it's a raven landing on your lawn, or you're standing face to face with a brown bear for longer than you might have expected, or something like this, or you keep seeing the numbers 420 appear on license plates and more than you might normally. Those symbols represent something else, and the symbol that is so stunning in the Taurus charts doesn't take place in Taurus and doesn't involve any of the planets associated with Taurus, but by house and sign placement, it is very significant. And that thing is the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn on the winter solstice of 2020. This is the thing that everything centers around, I think, in all of our astrology, but because Saturn is such, Aquarius is such a prominent sign in relationship to Taurus, and this is a momentous conjunction. This is personal for you. So the to break down that symbol, Aquarius is the 10th sign away from Taurus. And as you know, I read the whole chart. I don't just read one sign. I mean, it's possible to do that, but you get a better reading when you look at all the signs in relationship to any one thing that you're looking for. And so in this example, a real life, real time example, Jupiter and Saturn, the two largest planets, which together comprise more than 2,000 times the size and something like 800 or 900 times the mass of the Earth. So it's a lot of stuff aligning in a conjunction, not on any day, but on the winter solstice in the north, summer solstice in the south, but the solstice, that's just one of the quarter days, and it's a PowerPoint in the year. And this is happening in the first degree. So it gets emphasis because it's happening in this moment, in this location in space-time that has this fresh feeling, this feeling of a new beginning. But it's not a small new beginning. It's not the consolation prize. It's the grand prize. The thing is, you have to bring your thought, your effort, your ideas, your passion, your love for existence to this. And I would also add that part of the success described by this involves answering a calling to leadership. Very important. The 10th house is about leadership in a number of different forms. There's a formal quality to the 10th house leadership. There's a social quality because the sign Aquarius is involved for you. There is an accountability piece because the 10th house has that quality to it. And there's stepping up to whatever challenge this represents. Now, I'm working today on the second day of Taurus. So let's just count signs. I think it's going to come out to 5. Taurus that leads to Gemini, that leads to Cancer, that leads to Leo, that leads to Virgo, then that leads to Libra, then that leads to, more Scorpio. Then we're at the halfway mark of Taurus, then Sag, then Cap, 8 months from now. And there is a developing story in these 8 months. And you want to call yourself present for every phase of the story, every phase of these developing events. And I would propose that, because I know that some people listening to this are not necessarily going to be in the best shape financially. If that's you and you purchase this reading, thank you. I'm going to try to make sure that you get at least 20 to 50 times the value of your investment. And so you have this time between now and the solstice, when the sun enters Capricorn and Jupiter and Saturn are conjunct in the first degree of Aquarius, right on your midheaven, right on the success angle, right on the all the way to the top angle, the public angle of your chart, where you directly integrate your life with the corporate sphere, the government sphere, your own business, intentions and ambitions. And I would point out that in times like we are in, there are opportunities. And even better still, there are opportunities that do not require exploiting people. There are going to be lots of opportunities that require or facilitate or encourage or enable people to take advantage of others having a difficult time. There are also highly productive, socially conscious, and friendly ways to have take advantage of opportunities. And so I would point out that to say this in no way insinuates benefiting from anyone else's loss, but rather a positive net gain for everyone involved. The difference is, and also the difference between basically having no opportunities, nothing going on, is about taking a positive and optimistic approach and taking a creative approach and counting yourself into whatever game is being played, which means not counting yourself out. And I would remind you that many of the most successful people in the world have found their success in a time that seemed like things were just really hard, or where they felt like they had in some way failed, or there was just nothing else to do except the one thing that they wanted to do, which is another way of saying that it will help if you are able to separate your need to make money from the work that you want to do. Now, I know this might be very challenging in a moment when it seems like a lot of opportunity has dried up. However, there is a necessity whether it's described astrologically or not, and I believe that it is, that you be with yourself on the right thing to do. And that doesn't mean necessarily the morally right thing. It means the thing that you want to do, the thing that you feel called to do. The 10th house has that feeling of your calling finding you, your calling being audible. You actually can hear and feel and respond to the pull, to the to the motivation that will give you the energy and the optimism to be able to move through this. And this is a beautiful moment in that it is a time when, in many ways, the slate has been wiped clean for the world. Now, there are still going to be attitudes and values, and I think the world is going to bifurcate into the people who wear masks for the rest of their life and the people who don't wear masks, the people who are friendly and who trust people and who don't walk around feeling like they're a disease vector and that everyone else might be a disease vector, or some combination thereof, and the ones who want to be social and interact and are not afraid. And I would encourage you to keep leaning into the side of not being afraid. I would encourage you to take basic precautions around this COVID thing. But the main form of being afraid is more likely to be and to shape up in the long run as being about our economic situation, whether we are able to live our purpose truly, and this is important because your chart speaks so clearly of this, that we get our relationship to corporations and the government right and not sign away our lives based on any fear-based excuse or threat of any kind. And you are in a position to step up and do the right thing for yourself and for the world. You have the strength. You have the personal integrity to do this. But personal integrity is the thing that you need to be with as a conscious process every single day and make sure that you update your files and that you have a new and living concept of personal integrity. And most important, I think, is that you make a conscious habit of flexibility. I happen to collect Taurus people in my life, and I don't exactly, you know, go around looking for you guys. You just show up a lot. And so I have been able, through my astrology career, to make a kind of an ongoing study of just, you know, just what it is about Taurus people from a close-in standpoint. Some very important people in my life have been and continue to be born under the sun sign Taurus. I haven't noticed the rising sign so much. And I can tell you that there is a flexibility thing, being adaptable. Taurus is famous for its ability to be fixed. It's a fixed sign. But in the world now, and I think at every stage of history, but especially now, there is a necessity to be able to make sure that your integrity includes the ability to flex and to flex on the level of ideas and to flex on the level of your ideas about yourself and to notice when you're not flexing, to notice when you are being rigid and stuck and stubborn, and catch yourself before you have to trip over that, before you have to you know bear the brunt of some refusal to be open-minded, which is going to include maintaining a positive frame of mind as best you can and being flexible enough to see the possibilities. This is a trick for a lot of people to even be able to acknowledge, admit, and see the possibilities. And a little goes a long way. And you just need to stretch a little bit more and work for that flexibility. Aquarius, we're much of the most brilliant astrology takes place this year, particularly at the end of 2020 and into 2021, has a property of being one of the most fixed of the fixed signs. It contains the quality of crystallization. It is the quality of, for example, the best I can give is the internet taking over everything, right? It starts as this thing that you go to a cafe, you buy a cup of coffee, and they give you a card, and you can check your email for 10 minutes. Remember those days? Wasn't that quaint? To suddenly it being mandatory everywhere, and then no matter what you do, you have to do it on the internet. It's partly why I like to draw my own astrology charts. Even if I'm getting some of the data from the internet, I like to use Sharpies and paper and take a picture of it. And why we need to do as much as we can off of the internet. But the internet's just an example of crystallization, where something starts as a little thing and then it frosts over the whole planet. And then suddenly you can't get away from the internet. And this is a property of Aquarius. And one of the things that has happened as a result of the shock that our society has gone through is a a function of something occurring at the early stage of the Aquarian age to break the pattern that we were on, and that pattern was about destroying our ability to live in harmony with the Earth. Anyone who is tuned into the Earth knows that we're only damaging our ability to live with the Earth. That the Earth goes through stunning changes. We're overdue for a meteor strike that could basically wipe out 99% of the species. Yes, it's true that we're in the midst of a mass extinction, but not like a meteor strike. So the Earth withstands those on a fairly regular basis, and then everything reshuffles and life reinvents itself and it grows back. Life grows back, and there's some things that come from the past. So in terms of global warming, for example, and the pollution problem, for example, what we're really talking about is our ability to live with the Earth, our ability to sustain our version of life, human life, at this time. And what I would suggest is that whatever you choose to do, whatever your next calling might be, that one of the criteria that you use is the ability for a metric of some kind, an evaluation for something that uses resources efficiently and does as little damage and as much good in the same equation. Something that uses very little and provides great benefit. This is one of those things now that pretty much everything is going to have to align with as we go forward. Okay. Now, one of the best things in your astrology that talks about flexibility is the retrograde of Venus in Gemini. Now, I glanced down at the chart, the blue one, this pretty blue one that I'm using for Dharma, I've got both up at the same time, and I'll do another reading for Dharma really soon, and I'll make it different than this one, is that you've got Uranus in your sign, and so this is the big jolt. So let's talk about that just for a quick second, because this is the really rare thing. I mean, everything happening is kind of rare right now. And the fact that it's all happening together is just off the charts and on the charts. So, because they're astrology charts. Uranus in your sign is the big shakeup. It is the thing, as I said, you know, I'm looking at this going on over the past couple of years thinking there's going to be some kind of a market shakeup. And then suddenly, in the first full year of, I believe the first full year of Uranus and Taurus is 2020, right? It comes in 2018, then it backs out and it re-enters in 2019. So we're in the first full year, and I think there's going to be five in total, maybe four, of Uranus and Taurus. And this is it's another version in astrology of the unstoppable force meets the immovable condition. The unstoppable force is Uranus. Uranus is the thing that you don't mess with. Uranus is the thing that Richard Nixon messed with when he got himself involved in Watergate, and Uranus came by in Libra and squared all of his planets in that era in Capricorn, and basically knocked him down like tenpins. So you don't mess with Uranus, but with the combination of Uranus and Taurus is particularly exciting because deep beneath the beautiful exterior of Taurus, this impeccably presented, well-regarded, well-reputed, putting its value forward idea of Taurus. The version of Taurus in the form of my friend Neil, who knows exactly when you should wear what clothes based on proper etiquette, and actually has the Emily Post books on his bookshelf. So only a Taurus would have Emily Post books on their bookshelf, right? Underneath that, underneath that propriety, the underneath the somehow acquiring a grand piano and you have it in your house, you know, the impeccably maintained garden, whatever it might be, underneath all that is this fire that's burning. And this isn't the favorite thing I've ever learned about Taurus. And if you can get your hands on a copy of the Taurus chapter of Esoteric Astrology, we'll try to look that up and see if maybe it's not available as a PDF. It might take you the whole year to read one chapter in a book, but it'll be worth it. And one of the things that Alice Bailey says in that chapter is that that Taurus is actually misunderstood, and that it is actually a fiery planet, and that the ruler of the planet of the sign, it's a fiery sign, and the ruler of Taurus is actually Vulcan, the god Vulcan. There's no planet Vulcan. It's hypothetical and theorized, but not a physical planet that I know. It might be an asteroid, but that's not what she means. She means something that's a big planet close to the sun. And there's a ephemera someplace. But what she says is, because it's a hypothetical, I think, that that Taurus is the blacksmith shop of the soul. And underneath all of that beauty and all of that apparent outer harmony and the presentation, and it's not only the beautiful garden, it's the beautiful garden that people feel comfortable being in. But underneath all of that is this smoky, loud, fiery internal place where you forge your soul. And what I love about Uranus and Taurus is that it taps into that quality, to that idea of what Taurus is. And so on one level, it's like, if you're trying to figure out, like, what would Uranus do to Taurus? Like, that's, you know, what's it going to be like? Turning the Metropolitan Museum of Art into, like, you know, painting all the marble statues with psychedelic paint? I mean, that would be some cool Photoshop work. What is this going to be? Like, how do you combine Uranus and Taurus? Like, what kind of psychedelic is that? Well, it's the kind of psychedelic that takes us beneath the ground and to the place where there is energy moving. And that's the thing that's fueling you and has been fueling you for 2 years and that has been warming up for time before that. And that is going to give you a place to tap into a kind of geothermal energy inside of yourself to make the changes that you want to make, to make changes, to be comfortable with making changes, to leap if you have to leap into the changes, or to feel like you're being pushed, or to have to rise to the circumstances, rise to the occasion that you're in, whatever form it might take. That's one of the gifts that Uranus is going to give to you. And so when we combine this creative force and this force of nature of Uranus, right, it is pure electricity and inspiration that exists without boundaries and without proper containment of any kind. And we combine that with Saturn on your midheaven, which gives you focus, a sense of authority, and discipline. Mind you, in Saturn's best sign is Aquarius, hands down. I think the second best is either Libra or Gemini. Saturn loves to be in an air sign. It gives discipline and precision of speech and the ability to focus thought. And here we've got Saturn in its day sign, in its master sign. And for you, Aquarius is the noon angle in your chart. That's kind of, you know, it's a solar chart we're talking about. So it's relative. It's like an astrological tarot spread. But in the symbol of this tarot spread, you've got Saturn shining like the sun at noon, which gives you discipline and a sense of personal authority where you don't need others to tell you what's right and what's wrong, where you're willing to take that all on yourself, and you are willing to be in harmony with the social realm that you exist in and to take leadership. At the same time, you are bursting with the energy of Uranus. Well, that is some interesting tension to work with, and it's a picture of the kind of leadership that you are going to develop and that you are going to acquire. While we're on this subject, I'm going to break for a few minutes and play a little bit of Vision Quest. Let's look at the exact squares of, I have not looked this series up, of Saturn and Uranus. Let's see if there's one or there's more than one. So Saturn in Aquarius, faster moving square, Uranus in Taurus. Notably, there's this idea that Uranus is the modern ruler of Aquarius. Let's hypothesize that might be true. They certainly have plenty in common. So we've got Saturn grounding all of that in a real way. So now let's see. We've got first square is Feb 17, 2021, June 14, 2021, December 4, 2021. Let's go through those again. February 17, 2021. That's a big one. Useful. By big, I mean useful. June 14, 2021. That's, I don't know why that rings a bell as being an important day, but for this purpose, it is. And then December 24, 2021. And so 2021 is the year that you engage these squares between your personal sense of being and your professional power. And this is about power. It's about harnessing power. I mean that in the best sense of the word. What's happening in 2020 is the warm-up to this, where Saturn makes its way into Aquarius. You're getting there now. You're getting used to that now. Dipping in. It's going to dip back out at some point in the spring. It's going to go back in to stay for another two more years in December. It's going to then be met by Jupiter. This is very, very helpful. Mike, saying that slowly enough and dramatically enough for emphasis. The reason it's so helpful is because if Saturn has a failing, it's that it just needs to be aided and abetted by the process of expansion, right? Saturn is good at containing. It's also good at plowing things out of the way. Jupiter is very good at expanding the conversation and giving you a sense of your potential. And so I want to urge you to pay very close attention to your sense of your potential. And then as the winter solstice, summer solstice in the south approaches, observe yourself considering your sense of potential. This is an uplifting moment. It is a moment of expansion. It is a moment of connection. It is a moment of recognition and integration into some form of a collective community, but you are an exemplar in this equation. You're someone who sets the tone. You're someone who is able to take the responsibility of being in charge of your affairs and of overthrowing this dark parental energy that we live with in society in place of taking responsibility for yourself, for your life, and for the community that surrounds you. This all points to a sense of mission in the work that you do. And I don't care what is going on in the world. I cannot imagine better astrology for embarking upon your true calling than what we are experiencing now. And fortunately, there's lots of time to warm up into that, to get a sense of the new territory, to experiment. Uranus in your sign loves to experiment. Okay, so I'm going to pause for a moment, play a little bit of my default theme. When I haven't finished the Taurus music yet. I got there. Let's see. It's supposed to sound like this. Maybe I'll record that, but if not, it's a beautiful piece called Star Mountain. And then in the next discussion, I want to talk about the new moon that's about to happen tomorrow, Tuesday, Wednesday, day after tomorrow, I believe. And then, it's 22nd, today's the 20th, so it's in 2 days. And then Venus retrograde, followed by a bit about Mars retrograde. So back in a few. Hello and welcome back to the Taurus Guide to Radical Transformation. Just love how that sounds. Okay, so my work plan for this segment is going to be start with the new moon, which is on the 22nd. And then talk about this retrograde that is conjunct Vesta, and the solar eclipse in Cancer, which takes place on the solstice. The solstices and equinoxes this year are not whispering. They are speaking loudly and clearly, and we have an eclipse on the Cancer solstice, otherwise known as the northern solstice. And then I will touch upon this very interesting retrograde of Mars in Aries, which is your 12th house. This deep inner being. Okay. So here's what I love about the new moon chart that is set for 9:25 p.m. 9:25:47 p.m. Eastern Standard. How is this computer still in standard time? So this is going to be 10:25 Eastern Daylight Time. A lot of computers. I forget to change them all. It is conjunct the degree where Chiron was discovered. I think, let me offer some thoughts about that. I've done a lot of work with Chiron over the years. I was turned on to Chiron in 1994 or early 1995 by somebody named Laurie Burnett, who said, if you like Pluto, you will love Chiron. Now, Laurie co-wrote Pluto Evolutionary Journey of the Soul, the most widely regarded astrology book of the late 20th century, and then began to understand Chiron. And I was lucky to have her as a teacher, my very, very first teacher, to consciously explain astrology to me as a spiritual path and as a vocation. If you like Pluto, you will love Chiron. And Chiron was discovered in Taurus. It was discovered in the fourth degree of Taurus. The degree is the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, which is a beautiful degree in Sabian symbols, and which Dane Rudyar, who kind of redid the Sabian symbols in the 60s, said this is about the joining of the celestial and the worldly orders. They're one thing. And it's also the degree where Chiron was discovered, and hence the title of one of the more famous books about Chiron, Rainbow Bridge Between the Inner and Outer Planets. That rainbow comes from the Sabian symbol of the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And what I have found is that the discovery degree of Chiron, which is in Taurus, again at 4 degrees of Taurus, is very much a Chiron location. It is a kind of like a standing Chiron. Doesn't move, stays put. And then when things happen there, we get something of the Chiron effect. And what I've also found, and this might be relevant depending on how old you are, is that November 1st, 1977, or the autumn of 77, is a time that is pivotal in many people's lives, and I will often include it on my inventory of Chiron transits when I do people's transits and ask them about the turning points in their lives. And this is a pretty easy way to do some advanced astrology, by which I mean getting an advanced result, is to just look at your Chiron transits. Any astrology student can help you, and there'll be lots of people at Planet Waves who would look up a few of them for you. And so now we have one of these things, which is a new moon in the degree where Chiron was discovered. And so we get a chirotic effect from that. And I don't like to use the word intense in my astrology writing, but it's fair to describe this as an intense event, because Chiron conjunct the moon, or moon conjunct Chiron, depending on what angle you're going from, it is a physically resonant thing. These are the people who walk into the room, and you've got your back turned to them, and you turn around to see who walked into the room. That's moon and Chiron in a conjunction. And the sun and Chiron in a conjunction bestows power in a way that is about taking command of your adult authority. The moon calls for this as well. The moon and the sun are influences that can describe parents and relationship to parents. And with all of this Saturn going on in your chart, one of the things that's vital to do and which will symbolize and be demonstrative of your getting a grip in the frame of your existence, and really feel like you're taking steps and not just slipping on a ramp, is to get this thing of getting external parents out of your life. The external symbols that tend to step in and become authority figures in ways we don't need as adults. We can work peer to peer. We don't need to be working in parent child format. And the more insidious inner parents who tend to run people's lives. And as it happens, actual physical parents who can still have way more of authority than they deserve when we're adults, and they took more authority than they deserved when we were children, and may have neglected us in some way, messed us up in some other way, or a combination of messed up and neglected in some other way, depending on parents working together, and just get a grip and take authority for our existence, which means thinking for yourself and knowing when you're not thinking for yourself. The whole thinking for yourself thing is fine and dandy in theory, but then you have to have some way to know that you're not quite doing it, and then you can start to do it. And the other thing about Chiron, and other of many, but one that is often left out of the whole Chiron conversation is Chiron's role in mentorship, which is a form of teaching that is what parents should do, but they can't because they're too emotionally close, and most are in over their heads when they have us, and they lack the self-respect in many cases, and don't have the knowledge. And so the mentors, who can be a form of a surrogate parent in an appropriate way that recognizes the mentee as an evolving being. And the other thing about mentors is they have to have a bit of detachment from the life of the person that they're mentoring or who seeks them for guidance. Because if they have emotional attachment, they can't do the job effectively. It would be a little like me emailing everyone who bought this reading and saying, did it work for you? Was it okay? You following everything I said? Oh, fuck that. So there has to be some level of like, here's some ideas, doesn't work with. Take it or leave it. And I trust you're doing your best. So with Chiron present, there's a mentorship factor. And if you want to know why I know so much, I've got a lot of Chiron in my chart. And I have hooked into that power as a talent for finding mentors. I call them professors. Like, I have different professors in my life, like a lot. I live in a kind of a miniature personal university, and then I happen to run a publication, so I have lots of places to put all this information that I'm collecting for mentors. Mentors for sexuality, mentors for astrology, mentors for media communications. Eric McLuhan, the very son of Marshall McLuhan, personally tutored me in media studies. This is some good karma. I can teach this now, but I have a knack for finding the person who really knows the subject or can really help. Many of them have been attorneys. Some have been environmental activists who've been through a lot of shit and who taught me to do things like have fun and ask questions when the chips are down. And so what I would encourage you to do is find the wise people. The wise, not the people who hang shaman on their single outside the door, but the ones who are directly tapped in. And that means tapped into the earth, which is the moon in Taurus, and tapped into the sky, which is the sun conjunct Chiron, and generally connected, and have this ability to bridge things and to cultivate relationships where you build not only your knowledge, but your character. And so this means understanding that one of the most important teaching functions in mentorship is the acquisition of character and the modeling of character. This is a word that is not used enough and that has been almost abandoned for being somehow antiquated. Okay, so this is this glorious new moon, and then soon after, the sun is going to be conjunct Uranus, and it's going to be an exciting week this week, and an exciting year for you. And if you want one word, this is a wonderful segue into the Venus retrograde in Gemini for all of this moon sun. Conjunct Chiron, and then moving into a conjunction with Uranus. Think of it as reevaluation, which also includes revaluation, valuation, and a general inquiry into values. By the way, that's unintentionally the subtitle of a book called Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. If you have time on your hands and you're interested in what values are, That's a book to read, and I think that you will finish reading it with a level of profound respect for its author, a man named Robert M. Pirsig.
Okay.
Next topic. Venus is about to be retrograde in Gemini. Venus is not retrograde very often. It's only retrograde 8% of the time because it's so close to the Earth. The Earth is often tracking it. It ends up being retrograde for about 6 weeks every 18 months. And it's always meaningful and interesting and evocative of a certain vibration that I'll see if I can describe to you. And in this go-around, it's happening in Gemini. And so if we take Taurus as the first place in your chart, right? Remember, you may have a different rising sign. The Taurus, chances are that you do, but for the sake of this kind of reading, kind of a using the astrology chart as a tarot deck, and saying we're going to reference this, reading around the sign Taurus as our origination point. Gemini is house number two, and that's the house of values and of evaluation. Second house is very important because it addresses concepts such as self-respect. It is about the value that you ascribe to anything and everything, truth be told. And it is particularly interesting in that it is one of the first places where you can find your mutability, which is the thing I was talking about, having flexibility. One of the ways you gain flexibility is you work with your mutability. There's a number of ways that you do this, but one of the ways is by being open to an inquiry about your values and a curiosity about why you value what you value. By the way, particularly if you think that your childhood was difficult, you want to be on a quest for understanding why you value what you value. And first, you have to notice what you're valuing. And there's a number of other places. You can do this brilliantly as an artist. The mutability factor will empower you as an artist. You can do this in sexual relationships where you can find a mutability that blends the spiritual realm and the physical realm. The realm of attachment and commitment and a very far-reaching and wide-angled concept of using your sexual energy and your sexual beauty to connect with the Godhead or the Goddesshead or both. Or the morph of them. And another way you use your mutability is among your friends. Your friends are teachers of inner diversity to you. And your friends will make interesting models for you in terms of how you can be different, how you can be a little more like what you admire in them. And there's required a kind of a relaxation of attachment, of which Taurus is famous, but now we are in Uranus and Taurus times, and so there's going to be a lot of relaxing of attachments. However, where this Venus retrograde takes place, the retrograde of your ruling planet is in your second house and takes place entirely in your second house, and it expands between May 13th and June 25th. I believe it began with the ingress of Venus into Gemini some days ago and will end with Venus egress of Gemini and entering Taurus in some months. It's going to take a while. There's going to be a process involved here. And so you're going to have Venus under the microscope in your second house. This will, when I say will, I mean opens the potential to. So you just substitute that. It's not so deterministic, but in any event, words are imprecise. Grant you an opportunity and an ability to see the other side of where you're coming from. Gemini is always about seeing the other side and putting both elements of yourself into the mirror. Then there's the retrograde factor. The retrograde, too, evokes a kind of a polarity of a planet. It is about, it's kind of like an inverse of the planet, or like the antimatter version, or the parallel universe version. And can also be helpful in retrieving things from the past, retrieving things of value and people of value, and people may come into your life for resolution. The events may come up for healing, past, particularly with the conjunction of Chiron, the moon, and the sun at the new moon. So that I didn't mention the healing aspect of Chiron. It's kind of, you know, sometimes in some ways goes without saying. But with this thing, this new moon conjunct Chiron, so encrypted into your solar return chart, and the retrograde happening, be on the lookout for events and people and places and things and circumstances and memories and thoughts that surface for the purpose of healing, for the purpose of helping you be whole and not carry around the past as baggage, but rather to experience the past as what you learned and what you gained, and also what you no longer need, but are not merely discarding in that, by the way, classically American way, but are integrating, taking ownership of all your experiences. Now, what makes this retrograde so unusual is the extended conjunction to Vesta in Gemini. This happened, it was exact about a week ago. It'll be exact soon after the retrograde begins in right around the third-ish week of May. And then it'll be exact in a few months when both Venus and Vesta are in Leo. So there's going to be two of these events that take place in Gemini. And in a sense, the entire Venus retrograde process is associated with Vesta. Even though Vesta is going to be in direct motion, as far as I understand, through the whole thing, there is this double conjunction of Venus and Vesta. And Vesta has many properties. Be aware that I did a special version of Planet Waves FM. Just go to the main homepage, planetwaves.net, go to Planet Waves FM tab, and scroll down, and you'll see a beautiful orange and green graphic where I devoted an hour to just commenting on the conjunction of Venus and Vesta, because it is so significant for everyone. Vesta has a number of principles. The most important, I think, two important ones are the organizing principle. Think of Vesta as the hearth at the center of the home, or of the kitchen as the heart of the home. If a house is good, it's a good house if it's got a good kitchen, and the kitchen is the center of activity. And I would therefore, by the way, put a lot of extra love into your kitchen, into your food preparation, and into tending the hearth. So think of this as the organizing metaphor for this Venus retrograde, tending the hearth, tending the fire, the sacred flame. Maybe you have some occasion to go somewhere and make a fire. Maybe somebody's got one of those little caged in little fireplaces. I forget what they're called. I used to have one. I loved it. Maybe you have a place you can actually make a fire and sit around the campfire, tend the fire alone for a while, figure out a way to do that. Also, the kitchen is the natural extension of this. The Greek version is Hestia, a domestic goddess, and so there's a domestic quality coming out of Greek mythology, but out of Roman mythology, we have these supremely important women known as the Vestal Virgins. And one of my very favorite things about the mythology of Vesta is that it is surrounded by the stories of actual living women who were servants of the goddess. And one of the things they did was they tended the flame. The flame could never go out. One of them was accused of being unchaste. The Vestals were virgins, of course, and which meant that they practiced chastity for a period of 30 years. And one is said to have proven her chastity by reigniting the city flame with no source of heat or spark. That's how important this notion of tending the flame is. And of course, the flame is your inner flame, your inner creative flame, your inner sexual flame, your vital force energy, your prana, your chi. But the creativity, the sexuality, and the focus on the home fires, the hearth, are the triumvirate that I think is so central to this. Additionally, all about Vesta, everything about Vesta evokes the concept of service, selfless service. And so there is a value that you are cultivating of selfless service. Now, your chart talks about some major success, some embarking on a leadership path of being called to a kind of Aquarian era leadership, whatever that seems like for you, right in the moment where society is healing from the shock that to me is the official commencement of the Aquarian Age. It is the interruption of the pattern that to me symbolizes the invocation of the Aquarian Age. And you are being called to leadership at that time. And in preparation for that, Venus will be retrograde in your house of value, self-respect, self-value, your possessions, your gifts, your talents, the esteem in which you hold yourself. And it will be retrograde in a long conjunction to Vesta. One that happened recently, one that happens at the time of the retrograde, so we've got it right there. And then for part of the retrograde, Vesta is in Gemini. So this Vesta symbol is speaking to you now, and it is modifying the concept of Venus, which can be self-indulgent and which can be selfish. Okay, all that. The Vesta conjunction and the Gemini placement obviate that. Let that go, and notice when you are leaning back into some outmoded concept of what it means to value yourself and experiment with the experience of service. Now, the sexuality piece of this, which I address at length in the special edition of Planet Waves FM, standalone edition, is threefold. One, sexuality is a healing process, and healing from past emotional and physical sexual injuries. Now is the time to do this. Now is the time to take advantage of the available alignment. I mean, this is astrology at its best, is when you can align your agenda with what is available and relatively easy at the time, right? Because you could do anything at any point. But what astrology says is, well, there, you know, Course in Miracles says, Course in Miracles is a required course, but only the time you take it is voluntary. So I would translate that into astrology saying, we must learn all these things, and then there are times when it's easier to voluntarily learn things than it is at other times. And one of the things that's easy to learn now is the process of your sexual healing as it relates to your self-respect. This may require taking time off from sex and sexual activity except that which you share with yourself. This is a very vestal thing. We don't know much about the details of the sexuality of the Vestal Virgin and whether it was a scene a little like Betty Dodson workshop or some other thing. It's not, to my knowledge, recorded, and I've never read about it. But in our times, a lot of sexual healing can happen as you deepen your sexual relationship to yourself and you explore your sexual relationship to yourself and you enter your sexuality to yourself as an act of service and as a loving ritual offering to yourself. I've written lots about this. If you're curious, there's people I can introduce you to who can talk about this. And I've been going at it every week on Planet Waves FM for now going back about 5 weeks to explain what this is and explain the role of masturbation in the sexual healing process. And then in the role of cultivating emotional sexual intelligence and therefore being a vehicle for you to learn to say the words that you need to facilitate your healing, both with yourself and eventually with others. Okay. That's a bunch of this. It's a developing story and a developing theory, but I personally am very excited that this opportunity exists. We need time to go within. We need time between relationships. One of the things I've noticed is quite a few people go from one relationship to the next, to the next, to the next. And one, without even overlapping them sometimes, they've got the next boyfriend or girlfriend. I've noticed this more with women in the course of my long life of observing women and hearing about their relationships and living out relationships, often have the next partner chosen before the previous relationship ends. Some are into the whole long-term thing. I get that, especially Taurus might really be into the, you know, keep it grounded and durable and lasting seemingly forever. But this talks about a little bit of an interregnum between relationships. And learning how to center your sexuality around your own inner fire and not the inner fire of someone else, not the projected fire of someone else, but to really bring your energy home and get your fireplace cooking and your meals cooking in your kitchen and do that for a while, and then you'll have something to serve. And speaking of service, there's a third possibility here. If the previous 10 minutes counts as two possibilities, here's the third one, which is practicing your sexuality in service to another. You may have opportunities to do this. You may have one glorious opportunity to offer yourself and have it not be at all about you. This is one of the true arts of Vesta. And if you identify with this goddess concept, that is a central tenet of the Vesta concept, is the ability to offer yourself sexually, emotionally, as a conversation partner, as a physical partner, as a sounding board, some combination of the above, and not have it be about you. It's a very beautiful feeling to be able to do this and to just offer yourself as a gift freely given for someone else's purpose with full consciousness, love, and generosity, without attachment to the outcome. Okay, now one last topic, and I might have to add a PS here, because there's something else. There's always something else beautiful, isn't there? Mars retrograde takes place later in the year. Let's see if I have my handy dandy little website made by one of the stellar Tauruses in my life, person named Amy, who's behind a lot of the making stuff happen. Mars retrograde. Okay, here's the timing, first of all, on this. And I'll link to this. It's called, we'll call the link Planetary Movements, and it'll be linked from the reading page. Just making a note to do that. Any other promise I have not kept, email me office@planetwaves.net, and we'll link it. What did I say? I was going to link something else. Well, we're going to link the Planet Waves FM on Venus Vesta. And we'll link Planetary Movements. There's one other thing. Okay, Mars retrograde process begins with Mars entering Aries on June 27. Mars is conjunct the Aries point on that day. Big time. Then is, I think, the gleaming highlight of the Mars retrograde, which is happens with Mars direct, but it still is aspect. Aspect choice, which is Mars conjunct Chiron. Talked a lot about Chiron. Aries, by the way, is a very relevant sign to you because it is in your solar 12th house. The 12th house is like the house of your inner sanctum of self. And with all of this Vesta going on, there's an emphasis on the inner sanctum of self happening. But then there's another version of the story told with Mars retrograde in Aries. And so I think the highlight of this is July 14, 2020. We're all the way out in 2021. 2022, actually. That's the next one. So this is a rare event. Mars conjunct Chiron in 9.5 degrees of Aries on July 14. Flag Day, if you need a room. No, that's not Flag Day. Bastille Day. And this is a, astrologically to me, looks like a kind of a radical moment of inner awareness. Let that carry you through the entire Mars retrograde process. This is all about inner awareness. It's also about making friends with and making peace with your inner masculine, whatever that means to you. Consider the many things it might mean to you. Consider whether it's meant anything to you. Consider whether you have always let men be your external masculine that you've taken on as your inner masculine. Whatever inner masculine means, mull it over and consider it. Because now's the time when you're getting sustained, high energy contact with something that is often a bit difficult to get a grasp on. These retrogrades of inner planets are major teachers. It might not be easy, but they teach us. Okay, so then the retrograde itself spans from September 9th to November 13th. Now, there may be about a 2 or 3 month gap between this Mars-Chiron conjunction in July and the retrograde in September. Here's what I suggest. Write this down somewhere. Remind me to write it down somewhere. When the retrograde begins in September, think back to July. Everything you need to know about the Mars retrograde, which happens mostly in late summer and autumn in the Northern Hemisphere, late spring and late, can't say that. Figure translate for the Southern Hemisphere, please. Sorry about that. You will have been revealed to you in the circumstances and events of July, particularly with the Mars-Cilicia conjunction. I've written a lot about that. Let's link to some of that Mars-Cilicia stuff on the readings page. A lot of background here for you to work with. There is something about retrieving your whole personality, including retrieving the essential male elements of your desire nature and integrating them in a loving way into your character with this retrograde, that you will learn a lot about how to assert yourself. You will learn a lot about a lot of things that you will need when you embark on the Jupiter-Saturn in Aquarius phase, when this is all done. All these retrogrades are going to be done at a certain point, and then you're in this new territory. And so part of what you're getting in the new territory is a retrieval of your Venus and your Mars, your true inner male, your true inner female, connected with a healing process. You do not need to drag around your pain of sexual and relational injuries and of things that were not told to you and the people who in any way shamed you. Let's conclude the Venus Vesta part with the topic of shame and guilt. This is a taboo subject. The presumption is that when there's guilt, there's a reason for it. I would say that the presumption should be when there's guilt and shame, we want to figure out what was done to us and who made us feel that way. And then remember that the process of healing guilt and shame is not so much a leave it behind thing, but a gradual integration of and exploration of that which exists on the other side of the shame barrier. It's a scrim. It's a thing that says, don't go past here. It might be a beaded curtain. That's the embarrassment version. It might be a warning sign and a boundary. That's the guilt version. And it might be a fenced off area that you're terrified is toxic. That's the shame version. Whatever it is, remember that you're going to be in a relationship with this stuff and gently, gradually figure out what it's hiding from you, right? It's going to be hiding one of two things. One, things that you need to heal. Two, things you really want and want to explore and want to feel. All right, one afterthought in the tradition of Quaker meeting. Quaker meeting, the members of the meeting can speak during meeting. There's no preacher in Quaker meeting. The members of the meeting sit in silence and then may speak once during meeting. Then what I found is that the meetings I don't know if it went around the country or whatever, they said, and then after the meeting was over, everyone shook hands and said good morning. Someone in an elder position in the meeting would say, and are there any afterthoughts? Which gave permission to people who didn't have the courage to speak into the silence of the proper portion of the meeting and instead wanted to just say their message in a kind of a more informal, little bit less like heart-thumping way, as can happen in Quaker meeting. An interesting experience if you ever get to go. And don't do the virtual version. You want to be in the meeting house for it. So in the tradition of afterthoughts, one thought here. One of the curiosities of your astrology for me for the past 12 years or so has been, what is Pluto in Capricorn really about? Capricorn is your ninth solar house. That's so the ninth house or place is the spiritual life. Capricorn here describes the orthodox quality of Taurus. And one thing I can tell you about Taurus is everyone I've ever known and loved, traveled with and did other things with, is there's an orthodox quality to Taurus, and it can be beautiful and it can be fucking annoying. It's like, yeah, well, the rules say that, but it's like, okay, but you know, we have to do something or eat something or go somewhere. Can't we just decide this for ourselves? Can't we just figure out what the right thing is without having to look it up in a book? Pluto in Capricorn over the past more than a decade, now going back to early 2008, I think has been about turning over the earth of orthodoxy, digging that pitchfork in that very satisfying way, and bringing up the earth from a few inches deeper, turning it over and softening the soil so that new ideas can grow. And now you have something in 2020 really beautiful going on, which is the conjunction of Jupiter and Pluto. And while Jupiter and Pluto has many associations with the Megadeth thing that we're having put in our faces and all this fear and all this stuff, there's another side of Jupiter-Pluto. And that is something I learned first from an astrology teacher, Isabel Hickey, who said, this is the common ground, or what she, the way she put it was the golden thread linking all the spiritual traditions. Now, a thread is a thread. And there is a golden thread linking all the great spiritual traditions. And you can pretty much toss all the baggage in the mythology and understand that there is a golden thread. And once you have connected with this golden thread, by the way, it suddenly becomes very easy to hang out with Muslims or Buddhists or Christians or Jews or whoever, you know, pagans or whoever might be, because you're connected to the golden thread at the center of all the religions, the trappings, the accoutrement, the baggage, whether it's a synagogue or a church or a mosque or a meeting house, matters not. There is a spirit of love that the religions may not honor, as the church bells chime in at 7 o'clock. Which I've gotten to like here in the age of the city with nothing going on in it. There is a golden thread, and you can be in possession of that. And the golden thread is all that is loving, right, and true. At the center of the idea of the religion. Christianity may be screwed up, and India may have turned Hinduism into the caste system and all this stuff, but Krishna loves us as much as Buddha, as much as Jesus, and Jesus loves Mary the Magdalene as much as Lord Krishna loves Radharani, and Radharani loves Lord Krishna. And in the secret tradition of Christianity, which I'm sure you're familiar with, Jesus ain't no virgin walking around the planet. He is in deep respect of Mary Magdalene. This is part of the, you know, this is the inner tradition of Christianity, and it works for many other traditions. And I think this is a, I keep coming back now to woman-centered. I mean, Tantra, which comes out of both Tibet and India, is woman-centered. And Hinduism, I mean, Radharani is love, be loved by Lord Krishna. And there's all these vitally important and beautiful goddess figures throughout Christianity. I leave you on that note here in this year of so much unusual change and the invoking of the fire goddess Vesta for all of us. Thank you for being part of my astrological life. It's a privilege and a pleasure to share it with you. I love doing these readings. I work from no notes at all. I just have a chart and speak from what these planets tell me and from my heart. Okay. Leave you with a little bit of music. And I will put this bit of data into your hands as soon as possible. Lots of love to you, and bye for now.